basically with premature rupture membranes and also preterm premature rupture membranes, all considered together. If you have maternal infections, it's component. You'll get chorioamnionitis. Chorioamnionitis means this is infection within the amniotic and the chorionic membranes. These are the membranes which play an important role in the cavity in which the fetus is contained. In situations where you have an infection in this area, then you are asking for trouble. Then urinary tract infection. Of note is that it is now considered that most infections in the uterus, majority and the most severe infections, actually come through the oral route, not even through the vaginal route, not even through the GI route. It actually comes from the oral route. So that's why oral hygiene is so crucial in pregnant women. GI infections, of course, so that you maintain hygiene, so that you ensure that they clean themselves, and if there's any GI infection, please treat. STIs goes without saying. Inherent intrauterine infection, because there are people who can have an intrauterine infection which eventually escalates. Issues related to cervical insufficiency, I'll mention this slightly later. Cervical insufficiency is what in the older books you'll refer to as cervical incompetence. That is a total misnomer, it doesn't mean anything. So we go for cervical insufficiency, that's the current one. Situations of a distension of the uterus, important. Issues like multiple pregnancy, macrosomia, polyhydramnios, okay, or just hydramnios if you come from the America, and GDM, gestational diabetes mellitus. All these are factors which can cause of a distension of the uterus. And things like if there's an inherent uterine mass like a fibroid because of a distension of the uterus, and therefore the pressures within are high, and therefore you are likely to have premature rupture, especially preterm premature rupture membranes is a common feature. Genetic and familial history, of course, most of these things, if you have a familial history of PPROM or PROM. PROM is not a major issue because you already termed anyway. PPROM is the one of concern. If you've got a family history of PPROM, then you must know, if you're taking care of this lady, you must know that that is something you think about and you correct it before anything happens. Malnutrition, proper feeding habit is too crucial. If you're not feeding well, of course it will affect many factors, especially the elastic bones and also the glycan bones and the cervical in the cervix are quite important. Then there's membrane abnormalities whereby you have a bit of weakness within the membranes. And the important thing about membrane abnormalities and the inherent uterine abnormalities, because the release of proteases within the uterine cavity, this infection, the proteases at the amniotic cavity leads to weakening of the amniotic membrane, and therefore provides an earlier area of weakness, and therefore as the pressures within the uterine cavity increases, that becomes the weaker link, and therefore rupture would take place at that place. The last one is provider initiated. In some situations where you need to do investigations, where you have to do amniocentesis, and amniocentesis has got this risk of about 10% of causing leakage of the amniotic fluid, and therefore can create rupture of the membranes. So you have to be quite important careful in what you are doing. Instrumentation. Any procedure you do, you're more likely to cause that. Sometimes even if you're doing just a speculum and you are rough and maybe there's already membrane bulge and you didn't take care proper precaution, you you can easily, or if you're examining a patient and you're busy using instruments to clean the vag cavity and you have not visualized fast, there might be membranes sticking out there, and the next thing you do, you have done that. If you need to take a biopsy, then you are more likely also to cause injury to the membranes and therefore likely to have ruptured the membranes. So how does this patient present? These patients usually present with a certain gash of amniotic fluid, and the gash of amniotic fluid will lead to amniotic fluid leakage. So there are two. You may have sudden gash, or sometimes you may have a leakage. The interesting thing with a sudden gash is that sometimes it might make you think it's amniotic fluid, but probably it's just urine. So you have to be sure. Then you examine the effluent. You find that they're staining with things like Vanix, which you must know how it looks like. Then the meconium staining, if there is. You smell the amniotic fluid. It has got a very characteristic smell. Once you go to labor ward, you'll smell it and you'll never forget. In these patients, there'll be a reduction in uterine size. Of course, once you have loss of amniotic fluid, because the uterine size will descend, because what was sustaining the distension of the uterus, a good percentage will have been lost. So you have that. Number three, with that reduction in amniotic size, you may find that the fetal parts are quite close to the uterine wall, so you can easily feel them. There's no balloting which would feel between the fetus and the uterine wall because of the presence of the amniotic fluid. And in some situations, if the cervix is already open, or if you have cervical insufficiency, you may have some situation when you examine, you find that the prolapse of part of the fetal part, like maybe there's an arm prolapse, there's leg prolapse of the lower limb. So you have to, when you see that, then you know, of course, you can't have a prolapse unless the membranes have ruptured. So how do you make your diagnosis? First of all, take a history. If there's a drainage, you want to see if the lady was sleeping, you ask if there's any wetness in the place where she was sleeping. Wetness of the bed will tell you that there was a significant loss, and the leakage usually is effortless and may have just woken her up. And if she stood up, they find that the free flow of fluid going down her legs and forms a pool, especially if it's a lot, on the floor where she's standing, or on the ground where she's standing. Of course, when you examine her, I've told you about what you feel in the abdominal examination. The fetal parts are easily felt and it's very close to the uterus. Some patients, there might be uterine irritability. So when you feel like there's tenseness of the uterine muscle. When you do a speculum exam, the gold standard is to see a pooling of fluid in the posterior fornix, and especially when you ask her to do a Valsalva maneuver, like to cough or hold their breath and push their lower abdominal muscles, you will see a gash through the cervical os, especially in a situation where the os is closed. But if the os is open, of course, you'll see the flow, and you may even be able to see the fetal parts. Significant thing when you're doing a speculum in these patients, and when you're doing Valsalva maneuver, don't ask them to start doing it with a lot of force, because watch out, you may just have a cord prolapse. So you tell them to do it gentle, and you watch out for the pulling. If there's a rupture and there'll be pulling, you don't need to put so much force. The little force they exert is just enough for you to visualize if there's a leak or not. Fibronectin test, this is a special test you do. It will be able to help you confirm that is LIQA. Number two, fibronectin test is one of the tests you can be able to do to predict the onset of labor in these patients. So this one will show you during the tutorials what it is and how it is done. Fanning test, that when you do with your fingers and you see the stretching, that will also confirm that what you're dealing with is amniotic fluid. Nitrazine is basically to show you the pH. Of course, remember the vaginal pH is acidic, and this amniotic fluid is usually towards the alkaline side. So once you get a pool and you do your nitrazine test, you'll be on the safe side and you make your diagnosis. What are the investigations? Laboratory. Full blood count is so crucial. Please remember, you want to make sure that you want to know the fetal, the blood count. That's okay, especially the HB. But of more importance is the white cell count. The white cell count will give you an idea of whether are we having an active infection or not. Especially if you are going to do what you call expectant management. If it's still a preterm baby, a fetus rather, and you want to buy time, you do the count of the white cell. You have a baseline. That will tell you that if it's in the normal range, that's fine. But if you find that, and you'll be doing it at least every fourth day, which means twice a week, and if you find that you're doing an expectant management and you find that your white cell count is rising, then you know you're already having an infective agent setting in. Even if there's no obvious signs of infection, you must make sure then that you start planning how to deliver that baby, because remember, maternal, fetal, neonatal infections and the possible outcomes. You don't want to keep the baby in, the fetus in, and by the time it's delivered, the mother is compromised, the fetus is compromised. Other blood tests you do is like the CRP, and then also you can be able to, CRP will tell you that if it is rising, it is a sign that you are having infections taking place. And then also you do the other tests, which will be able, if you do a culture, you can even do a culture of the fluid so that you see if there is any bacteria. If they are raised, you treat appropriately. You do your urine test, because sometimes you may have an infection in the urine, and of course can transcend down to the vagina to give you the problem, so that you know what to do. Now, imaging, this is the ultrasound test. Obstetric ultrasound is done. It will tell you that gestation is important in management and in decision making. Amniotic fluid index. Now, amniotic fluid index, when you do it in ultrasound, it's done in four different pockets. You take at least four pockets within the amniotic, because you know the amniotic fluid divided in pockets depending on how the baby is lying, and you add all those four. Now, usually it should be something of 12 and above. Anything below that, you start saying that you are having low. And if it is less than 6, then it becomes very severe libidinosis. It means that if you don't have enough amniotic fluid, then the fetus will be compromised, because there's no space for development, no space for growth and movement, little amniotic fluid for swallowing, and also how it improves the expansion of that lungs, so you can easily have hypoplasia of the lungs. Then also pressure on the cord and on the placenta. And these are important aspects you look at in terms of decision making in the management of this patient, because it has got a far-reaching effect on the cervical function. So, how do you manage these patients? The management will depend on several factors. One, gestation. If somebody comes with PROM, premature rupture membrane, she's stuck. What do you do? You augment the labor. If there's no obstetric contraindication to doing that, if there's any obstetric contraindication for doing that, of augmenting the labor, then you go for a C delivery. If it is a premature baby, late preterm, somebody in the region of about 34, 36 weeks, and there's no any obstetric contraindication, augment that labor with syntocin. State of the baby at the placenta, if the baby is compromised, shows evidence of low heart rate or high heart rate, meaning that low non-reassuring fetal status, then you make a decision of whether are you going to deliver mostly by C-section. State of the placenta is very important. If the flow to the placenta is low, and also the flow to the baby is low, what you call, restrictive index, and that is in the umbilical artery, and also you look at the main cerebral artery index. If you find that these are low or no high, then you have to deliver this baby ASAP. I've talked about the amniotic fluid. If the fluid levels are very low, decide on the mode of delivery depending on the state of the baby. Infections, treat and deliver. Rather, deliver as you treat. You don't treat, then you deliver. Treat as you deliver. Previous maternal history is important. If a mother has had a history of pregnancy losses, if a mother has had a history of PPROM, his mother has had a history of intrapartum fetal loss, then you have to go for the full GOG and decide on how to deliver. And also, if the mother has had a previous history of family history of poor obstetric outcome, you are likely to have the same in the mother. So you have to be careful and opt for the best mode of delivery at that time. Now, the mode of delivery, if the baby is extreme preterm, then there are some decisions you'll have to make. I'll just mention it here because I'll come to it later. Gestation of below 24 weeks, even if you are heroic, somebody will tell you, yes, they survive. The percentage might be 1 or 2 out of 100. But most of these babies have got quite a lot of residual CNS abnormality, such that you start wondering, was it worth spending so much money in this baby, and at the end of the day, it becomes more like a cabbage. Any other comorbidity in the mother is important because they will influence the eventual outcome. Somebody has got GDM and they have got preterm rupture membranes. You know their risk of infection is so high. And when the infection goes up, the sugar levels go up. So you have to make decisions of what to do. And the best option is to decide when to deliver. So delivery options. This, I've given you the risk and what you need to do. Now you're the clinician. You have to make the ultimate decision. So it will be immediate and conservative. Let's start with conservative. What do you hope to achieve if you're doing a conservative management? The first thing you hope to achieve is one. You want to delay onset of labor while preparing for delivery of the baby. Or you want to delay onset of labor while stabilizing the mother if there is a maternal situation which has to be stabilized before the mother can be allowed to go into labor. So this is where you use tocolytics. And normally tocolytics, you are using them for a short period of time. Another important reason why you use the tocolytics is that you give it so that you are somewhere in a hospital, somewhere in Musambweni. You know that you have got no, and this is an extreme preterm baby, you have got no reason or a way in which you can be able to take care of the baby. If it is an extreme preterm baby or even a preterm baby, so you want to transfer either to Kenyatta, Nairobi Hospital, Aga Khan, or to Coast General, then use the tocolytics so that you can be able to transfer the baby in utero to the appropriate site which can take care of the baby. Now, use of corticosteroids is usually used to benefit the fetal lung. There's been a lot of controversy about corticosteroids. The initial studies thought to say that, they might have a non-beneficial effect to the baby. But we know there's an ongoing study. We know that it's beneficial. You give steroids, you can give dexamethasone or betamethasone. Dexamethasone is much cheaper, and they do the same. Earlier on, we used to give doses of 40 for over a period of 48 hours, maybe 8 milligrams 3 times a day for 48 hours. We now know a dose of the steroids, whatever dose you give, but ideally if you can give up to 12 milligrams, within 2 to 6 hours, you'll get peak effect. So even if you don't give a repeat dose, what you call a rescue dose, you are okay. That baby will already be taken care of. And then, of course, use of prophylactic antibiotics. Crucial. Earlier on, there used to be use of amoxicillin together with erythromycin. Studies have shown amoxicillin does nothing. So you should not use amoxicillin. So what we do now is... what you do now is we give you give erythromycin and clindamycin. Those will cover adequately. I've talked about corticosteroid, the two regimes, the conflicting reports of benefits. So there's an ongoing trial which is housed, the Kenyan study is housed in the Department of Obs and Gynae. And we are waiting to see at the conclusion of the study. It's a WHO-sponsored study. We'll see how the results will come about. This slide just repeats, just echoes what I've just mentioned. I've talked about tocolytics. You give it to transfer. You give it to allow steroids to work. If all is all right, you can still give it to delay onset of labor or to delay delivery, to give the baby time to mature. There are some patients whom you can give it, and if you're lucky, maybe within even a week or two, you can be able to buy time. But normally, remember, most patients, when they have ruptured membranes within 48 hours, they will have gone into labor. I've talked about antibiotic use. The reason is to reduce neonatal sepsis and to reduce chorioamnionitis. And the moment you reduce chorioamnionitis, you reduce the onset of labor because the uterus will stimulate itself so that you're able to deliver if there's chorioamnionitis, so that you have and you ensure that the infection does not is not contained within, because you end up with a scenario of effect on the baby. So it's a way of the uterus protecting the mother, the fetus, from continued exposure to infection. And what this patient, you have got frank chorioamnionitis, even if you give tocolytics, and it will not help. But the antibiotic usually will help reduce the onset of chorioamnionitis. There are patients who have had preterm labor and they have taken weeks. If they're even 26 weeks, they have even gone up to 32, 33, 34 weeks. In a few cases, patients who have had pre-prom have ended up with the leaky ceiling itself, and the pregnancy continues to term. We know that can occur, although it's there are not very many, but it can occur. Okay? Now, there are very many scenarios of how you can be able to improve amniotic fluid volume. One, these are things which are in research, so I'm just mentioning it for you so that you are aware of what it is. One, transvaginal amniofusion, whereby you give you infuse ringer's lactate. Unfortunately, most of this tends to just flow out. Transabdominal amnioinfusion, the same thing, because if there's already rupture, if you infuse, even if you infuse it slowly, they increase, distend, and then you have a loss. Amniopatch, whereby you patch up the amniotic, like the way you would patch up a tire a tire leak. This has been tried and might be able to work. Now there's an interesting one, gelatin sponge, embolization and beads. You put this through the cervix and the gelatin sponge you hope will be able to stick onto the cervical area, and it would be able to then go and close those areas. The embolization beads, you push them through the amniotic fluid, and we hope that the area of leakage, then you'll get the beads sticking. This is where the bioadhesive glue comes in. The bioadhesive glue works out like those of you who know how to repair tires. There now is new adhesive glue. If you have got a tire whereby you have got air leak, you push it through the nozzle and the bioadhesive will be pushed towards the site where the leak is. And with pressure from the air leak, it will go and stick onto the area of the air loss, and it forms a glue. And once that happens, you seal that patch. These are some of the interesting studies which are going on to try and be conservative, especially in the PROMs. Now, let's look at the gestations. This is the area of interest. If a mother is below 24 weeks, I've mentioned this in passing, you know the success is very poor. The outcome will be a problem. It needs a very, very highly competent staff. You need extremely good infrastructure. And this needs to be in very, very high output NICU centers, that is a newborn intensive care unit. And most of these babies tend to succumb. If they do survive, they are babies of poor quality. And the outcome is usually very poor. They end up being like vegetative throughout. So you talk to the parents, and especially if there are people who have been losing lots of babies, then they will tell you, doctor, do whatever you can to make this baby survive. So you have to go by the wishes of the mother and the parents, but also you must explain to them the capacity in which you are working in terms of taking care of babies of this side. But remember, in this kind of baby, the first 72 hours are usually the most important. These babies will be born alive. Like they'll tell you, look, this baby's alive, he's crying, he's kicking, do what you can. But the first 72 hours are the most important for these babies. Now, when you have got mothers who are draining and in high set up areas like what you find in Europe, North America, Japan, and the others. If the mother is stable, no chance of infection, no contraction, and everything is okay, mothers can be let home after 72 or 96 hours so that they can be managed from home. Of course, they have got facilities of home visits where the midwives taking their temperatures, taking the blood levels to make sure the WBC counts are okay, the C-reactive proteins, that the CRP are normal, and then the procalcitonin levels are normal. So those are the parameters you look for. We'll advise you whether there's infection or not. In case there's infection, then you treat appropriately, as I mentioned earlier. When you have a gestation of 24 to 30 weeks, of course, these are preterms. These are the ones you must give steroids for lung maturity. Because of this extreme prematurity, most of these babies are usually delivered by C-sections. Because their extreme prematurity, cesarean section is important because it delays the risks, reduces the risk to the baby, especially intracranial hemorrhage. Although the other schools of thought who say the process of labor is good for the baby, the pressure we get, and through especially of the cavity, the chest cavity, and the process of going through labor enhances the lung function. But that's really not the case, because you can always take care of the lung functions by use of medication. There's, of course, they are always admitted to NICU, and you watch out for respiratory distress to the baby. That is usually almost given. And we improve this by giving surfactant at birth. Give 6 milligrams surfactant. Usually you intubate the baby and you give it in 3 different batches. When you see it being done, you may think the baby is being suffocated, but it's very important. Surfactant used to be expensive, almost 70,000 plus. But now the cost has gone down because we use it every other day. You should spend not more than 10,000 shillings per dose. This has become a game changer in management of this patient. From 30 to 36 weeks, or more than 36 weeks, of course, they are still preterm because they are not yet 37 completed weeks. The outcome usually is much better in most centers, including our KNH. They do quite well. And of course, the interesting, the patients who have got late preterm have got increased perinatal deaths because they are that transition of prematurity term. So that interface is usually very, very fluid. But once the clinician, you as a clinician, you take cognizance of that fact and you make sure you look for the risks and you treat appropriately, you'll be quite okay. Of course, if you have a mother at 36 weeks and they're having PROM, PPROM, please deliver. The mode of delivery will now depend on the obstetric conditions which are arising at that point in time. You don't have to dilly-dally with this patient. Give yourself a surfactant. Now, I need to mention something. When you are dealing with preterm babies and you are going to deliver, other than giving the steroids, the dexamethasone, also give them magnesium sulfate. You can give 4 grams as a loading dose. You don't need to give the maintenance dose. You know, magnesium sulfate, you learn this later on, is used for patients who have got fulminant or eminent eclampsia or severe or preeclampsia with severe features, or those patients who have got eclampsia. Because you want, and in this situation now, you give it for what we call neuroprotection, so that it protects the CNS system or the baby, the preterm baby to be delivered. So don't forget to give magnesium sulfate, give antibiotics, and give your dexamethasone. These are beneficial to the baby. So, mode of delivery, as I've mentioned on and on, depends on the maternal and the fetal status. You cannot compartmentalize and say that this is what must be done. But of course, in the ones who are extremely preterm, deliver by C-section. But remember, if you're going to do a preterm, extreme preterm delivery, and the possibility of survival is low, then why do you want to go for this? That becomes the problem, because you give a mother a scar which is not going to help. So that's why vaginal delivery is preferable unless contraindicated. But you must have a neonatologist who will have the capacity to look after the babies. So one of the complications, increased rates of C-sections, I mentioned this on and on. There's something called oligodramnios tetrad. We like asking this question. And you can be able to examine a mother, you can be given a baby and told to make a spot diagnosis. So those babies who have had, the mother had had PPROM, you'll always have what you call oligodramnios tetrad. They are flattened faces, limb positional deformities. Of course, they'll have pulmonary hypoplasia, difficulty in breathing, and impaired fetal growth. So these are the 4 oligohydramnios tetrad. Of course, there'll be evidence of fetal hypoxia, and these patients tend to have cord prolapse, called compression and abruption. This increases your chances of seed delivery. And of course, delivery challenges. You are going to deliver this baby is a preterm, and a delivery, you may not be able to make the usual lower segment cesarean section because the lower segment is not yet formed below 28 weeks. So you end up making a slightly high deep incision you make on the uterine body. There's usually very thick muscle. There's a bit of bleeding. You make sure you must handle these babies diligently because your delivery, if you're rough, will even cause more injury than if you had allowed for vaginal delivery. This one will be a lecture by Bosida on preterm birth, so this one you may not need to go into this. The only thing I want you to appreciate, is that in these patients who have got PPROM, I'd mentioned the problem is sometimes you get cervical insufficiency. And when you have got cervical insufficiency, once there's already rupture of membranes, it is too late, game lost. You can always pick up patients with cervical insufficiency, one, from their history. Usually the membranes rupture in first time, they rupture in the second trimester. Then the in subsequent pregnancies, the loss occurs, the leakage occurs with decreased, gestation. And if you do an ultrasound earlier on, you can be able to start picking evidence of funneling of the cervix. And when that occurs, then you'd be able to see membranes leaping, L-I-P-I-N-G, leaping into the cervix. And that tells you that you already have a cervical insufficiency. And you find that the cervix is short. So if you can pick them early, if the history is clear, you don't wait for cervical changes. You go in and put your cervical sacklage. The easy one done is called McDonald stitch, which is past string suture. But if that fails or the cervix is too short, then you do what we call chirodica stitch. I do a lot of that. I do my, what I call my modified chirodica stitch, which is called Ogutu stitch, and it really helps in these patients. Any question? Okay, this is my famous, okay. This is just for you to know what happens. The current world population, this was about last in 2018. I'm sure this figure has really, really gone up. But the deaths have increased after the COVID effect. I'm sure these figures are quite high. So this tells you how much the population growth per year is estimated, per day is estimated at about 185 currently. But the figures may have gone down because of the pandemic. So this tells you how much you guys are going to contribute to the world population. Okay. This just out of interest. You see how people used to, this is how doctors used to examine patients earlier on. And you'll talk about Braxton Hicks, you'll talk about that in labor. You see women were always examined with full clothes and where people are sitting up. Okay. All right. So, let me see. I think I recorded. Let me just try and look at some of your questions raised. Somebody was telling me, yes, we can, Obama. Nchiri, Kamau, can you record? I did record. Yes, so Ogutu stitch, that is what you'd call. It's the chirodica stitch was the first stitch which was put in the 1956-57 there. And there's a way it's done. I've modified it to suit what we do in our setup. is different from how Shirodika did his teach, and I find it much easier than what was done by Shirodika. So that's why I call it the Ogutu's teach. Unfortunately, we are not. I have word I'll be putting tomorrow in Labour Ward, but now you guys are at home. But when you come back, you'll be able to see. Any question? Any question? Plus Rep, any question?
No.
None.
Yes.
Okay, if no question, we'll sign off. Okay, thank you. We'll organize for a lecture another day. But I'll also arrange to send the slides to through your email so that you can go through the slides. And then if there is any problem, we can always... I've got two more classes to give to you. When would you like me to... I've got one on hemolytic disease of the newborn, and I have another one on disproportionate fetal growth. When would you like us to have the next class?
Today is Thursday.
Any suggestion? Kamau,
yes.
Give me a suggestion.
Okay. Yes. Hi, sir.
When would you like us to do the next class?
Okay. The suggestion I would give is maybe on Thursday, or if Thursday, maybe at 10 or 9 a.m.
9 a.m., you know, when it is a bit, when it goes to 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I've got a school board meeting and we start meeting early.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let me look at the schedule. If there's no meeting,
yeah,
then I'll share the link,
uh-huh,
and then we can do Thursday, 9 a.m.
Okay, fine. Thanks. That can
work. Now, is asking an interesting question. Prof, will these classes be the ones you need open, as most of our classmates aren't able to join? Today I've got 61 of you. What we will do is this. When you come back, we will see the timing that the Senate will allocate. I'm also a member of the Senate, so when we go to the Senate meeting, we'll be able to discuss and see what is the time element we'll be able to give to the students so that they can be able to catch up as much as possible. What I know will happen, and most likely, you may find that it's possible that your calendar either may be squashed a bit, or we may find that we may eat into your elective period. And if we eat into your elective period, then you might be able to have a less period to rotate through the elective period, because it would be very unfair for all of you to do even less period, less contact compared to your other colleagues, because all of you are rotating through the three. So there are some who did, the other two did Ops Guy in the statutory 11 weeks. So for you to come and do 8 weeks will be a bit difficult. Some of these lectures, we will see how many can be repeated. But since you get half the class, we will look at the period given. If the period given is too short, then we might first of all play emphasis on the lectures which have not been covered, and then see those lectures which were not covered, what can we do about them? Can we just give you, like now I'll share you with the slides, and then we say that these ones will be covered at tutorials. The interesting thing is that these lectures which we give, they are also recaptured in a different way when you're doing your tubes. in the various rotations. But it's an important question which keeps on recurring. We have discussed it at the school management board and the college academic board and even at the Senate, and we still do not have a clear-cut answer. Now, the question why you cannot join is of concern to me, because all of you are supposed to give out your contact so that you get your bundles through Telkom. How many of you have been able to do that? Have you received information of how to get your bundles? Can any one of you answer me?
Sorry.
Class rep, have you been able to get your bundles? Or I think she must have left. Kamau,
Most of us were, those who had already applied got their bundle. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Have you received yours?
No, I've not received mine, but most of us who had already applied received their messages and they were to pick them. Some of us have picked them, but there are no bundles in the lines. They're just empty lines. And we are still awaiting on the updates to be made on the lines before we can use it even here. So for those who can access the bundles given, they can only access the university portal. And most of our classes we hold over the Google Hangouts meet. And
can I ask you, how many of you have got student emails?
Almost all of us have student emails.
Can you, if you have a student email, the best way to ensure you don't waste too much of your bundles and it's very easy to connect is for you to access the hangout we do. We go through the university web. So if you can be joining using your university email, it would be much easier rather than coming into a Gmail. Because if you use your university email, I don't even need to admit you. So I would like, when you get your link or your class email, what I would even ask is it possible for you guys to have a student email who have one of you, or even if you don't have that, then all of you want to get the link. Then join, once you have your link, copy it, accept through university email, through your university web, then post that link. I join directly. I don't even need to admit to you, just join directly.
Okay. Yeah,
that's an
try
idea.
Try to pass the meeting, then we see.
But for me, I've been using my student email, but I've always been waiting for admission pass.
Oh, okay. Then I'll talk to the, let me talk to the IT, then I'll give you communication through your the class or level 5 email address.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, thank you so much, and you guys go and I know, keep safe, don't go rioting everywhere.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. Have a nice day.